Well, hello, this is Ted Johnson with the Fish on Ted podcast. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. We're recording this particular podcast on the 29th of April, 2021, and things are starting to pick up and look brighter outside, at least. Talking with our good friend, Captain Chris from the Edmonds, Seattle area, and both he and I are experiencing almost summer type weather. And so, with the better weather coming and the fishing season starting to open and COVID starting to diminish like it has, this might turn out to be a pretty good year. So anyway, without further ado, hey, Chris, you there?
I'm there. How we doing, Ted?
You know, I'm sitting in 81 degree weather right now. I mean, it is gorgeous. I'm in central Oregon. How about you?
It is fantastic. We're in the mid-70s, maybe a little bit higher than the mid-70s. Got the celebrity bulldog up here in the office with me, Julius Caesar. Got the windows open. It's just glorious. Went down to the boat, did some measurements today, and just felt like spending the rest of the afternoon here. But I know you and I had to talk, so had to cut it short and come up back home.
Well, I am honored that I fit so high on the list with you to come back in weather like this and have to talk with me. But at least you got the windows open, and I would imagine, being the chef that you are, you've got a big elaborate dinner plan tonight, and your day will just continue on.
I'm not sure how elaborate it's going to be. I can tell you the celebrity bulldog is going to have teriyaki flank steak chopped up, really? And put in his food, the yeah. little majesty that he is. And I don't know, probably the girl and I might do something simple, like a little salmon Caesar or something like that. I know that she's stopping by Pike Place. She's got a special shop that she likes to go and get us a little special sub to add to my wine cellar. So I don't know what she's going to do. We'll figure that out.
Very good.
Couldn't ask for more perfect weather. It's just absolutely fantastic here.
Yeah. Well, hey, you know, on the fishing front, sounds like things are starting to ramp up in your part of the world. Wasn't there a big meeting a week ago or so, and now the seasons are on the calendar?
Yeah, we had our final North of Falcon season-setting process. And for those of you that don't know, and I know most of you guys that listen to this are knucklehead fishermen like us, but we do a process every year. It's called North of Falcon, and it is where the user groups come together, co-managers, us being sports fishermen through the Department of Fish and Wildlife and the tribes, and then other user groups, commercials. And they have forecasts that they've determined what the runs are going to be, what the returns are going to be. And then we carve out our seasons, and we figure out who's going to get what to maintain the sustainability of the fishery. So that all got finalized a week or so ago. And you know me, Ted, I'm always a half a beer mug full rather than a half a beer mug empty sort of guy anyway. But I'm telling you, at this time, we really made out. We really made out great. It's going to be a fantastic package for us. If anything, if I had anything negative to say, and I did at the beginning, but now thinking about it, I really don't. We lost the first 2 weeks of June for salmon fishing, which, you know, is not that big a deal. I mean, we booked a whole bunch of flounder fishing trips on that time anyway, so we're just as busy, if not more. You know, and the families and kids really love the flounder fishing, and a lot of my regulars, you know, with the families, and they book flounder trips instead of salmon fishing now because they got the kids love it. So it ended up being a win for us, I think. You know, moving over to a little bit of flounder during that time, and it's going to be a great season. We're going to start up with our resident coho June the 16th this year, as opposed to June 1st, and that's going to be spectacular. Those guys are in, and they generally move out into the rest of the sound and out to the rest of the areas about, you know, into July. So that's great. They're a fast hitting fish, super flavorful. They're eating shrimp and krill, which is real small. So it takes them all day to fill their little stomach. So the bite's pretty much on all day with those guys, which is fantastic. A better tasting salmon here, you're never gonna get than one of these resident co-hosts. The meat is a dark red color. It's fantastic. You know, it depends on when you get them. So they're in their fast growth spurt during that time. They've hatched some time ago, so they're eating and growing all the time. So they're growing about, you know, depending on, you know, what the conditions are, they can grow a quarter inch a week or more. So it depends on when you get them. Generally, they're going to be 3 to 4 pounds, maybe some 5 pounders. Uh-huh. But you're going to get some mix of some other larger coho that may be early coming in at that time too.
Right. And how many of those can you keep on a day?
Well, the limit is two. It'd be the two limit. We're very fortunate here, right off my front doorstep here in Edmonds, which is Area 10. We're able to be non-selective, meaning we can keep hatchery or wild coho, and that is the residents and that is the ocean run that are coming in October. Move up to the other areas, which is Area 9. A lot of guys will know that as Possession Point, Southeast Woodby Island. That is selective, and that is going to be hatchery only. It
is
important. I mean, it does give you a better opportunity. I would say, depending on the year, the split is about 60% hatchery to 40% wild, depending, you know, give or take a little bit from year to year. But this gives you a little bit, you know, better chance of putting more fish in the boat. We're nearing, you know, right out front here because you can keep both. My luck is if I want to fish Area 9 where it's selective, guess what? I'm going to hook only wild fish over there. So,
of course,
that puts us in a pretty good position.
Yeah. Well, gosh, a family of four then on a boat, you could come back easily with 8 fish during this. The resident go season. Holy smokes, that's a lot of fish.
Yeah, for sure. And if people know what the pink fishing is like, which this year is going to be the on year for the pinks, seems like every time you're looking at a rod, you got a pink on. This is what I really love about that June resident coho fisher is that these fish are biting constantly, and it's very similar, the feel and the experience of it, to pink fishing in that you got constant action. You know, these fish transition later on into late July or mid-July, depending on the year. They're going to transition into eating herring, which is a significantly larger, you know, food source. Sure. So when they get one or two of those herring in them, you know, like any other salmon, like for example, Ted, you know, if you had 2 or 3 quarter pounders, you're going to shut down for a little bit. It's the same way with salmon. Yeah, it's the same way with salmon. But the beautiful thing about that early June resident coho is they got to eat constantly because they're eating these little shrimp and krill. It takes them all day to fill up their little stomach, so the bite is pretty much all day occurrence. And you know, they're just gorgeous looking fish, just gorgeous tasting. Yeah, just fantastic.
Now do the pink are the pink showing up at the same time as the resident coho then?
No, the pinks generally they are a odd year fish, meaning every other year.
Right.
So this year, 2021 is an odd year and they're going to be in. And the great thing about the pinks, a lot of people call them humpies. They species is pink, is that when they come in the millions, not like, you know, a couple hundred thousand, they come in the millions. So what that means is that just, they're everywhere. It is a feast of salmon, and they are in Puget Sound. You could mark your calendar on this at about August 10th. And generally they're going to be right at about, I'm going to say they're going to be at about Foulweather Bluff to mid Possession Bar, which is southeast corner of Whidbey Island. They're going to be right there at that time. There'll be some that are in earlier, but the bulk of them start hitting about that area. They'll be in there thick at that time. And then just give it a couple days later, 3, 4, 5 days later, they're going to be on the beach all the way from Mukilteo down to the oil docks in Edmonds. Yeah. And it is a great fishery. You know, pinks get a little bit of a bad rep from the salmon snobs that are used to eating, you know, Copper River King up in Alaska. You know, they're not a Copper River King, but they're a great tasting salmon. Do the right thing with them, which we do. We get them in, we get them iced down. You know, you're going to want to eat those things fresh in the first 2, 3, 4 days, maybe 5 days. You got them iced down nice. And a lot of them I smoke, but you can do a whole lot of great things with those fish. I mean, there's so many ways to smoke them. You eat them the first few days and they're just bright and fantastic. They lack the oil content that some of the, you know, the kings have and that the cohos have. So, you know, you're going to want to do something with them, you know, within that time frame, but they're fantastic eating fish. And as far as action goes, you're not going to beat it. You're not going to beat it. You've got a fish on every time you look at a pole.
Now, is the retainage the same on those 2 a day?
Yeah, so it depends on the year. So a lot of years, what they're going to do is they'll give us a bonus pink bag limit. Now, cycle before last, which was year before last, we had pinks in. And, you know, Department of Fisheries, you know, God bless them. They do the best they can. They've got tons of data. They've got, you know, computer models that they go through. And they come up with a predicted return. And then we go through the process. And then we come up with the season. Well, the cycle before, they had called for, they had below average predictions on the pinks. Mm-hmm. So we didn't get the bonus two. So normally on a pink year, that's a good one, you'll get a limit of 4 pinks, which is, in my opinion, too much. It's huge. So last cycle, they predicted it was going to be off. So they put us at a limit of 2 pinks per angler, which in my opinion is fantastic. So you could catch a coho, you could catch 2 coho, you could catch a coho and a pink, or you could catch 2 pinks. That's a lot of fish for a family of 5. Okay.
Oh, it sure is.
But what happened was, Ted, they got it wrong. It ended up being a stellar pink year.
Right.
And we were filling the boat in a matter of hours. There was many days. We were on 3 trips, limits every day, and getting back to the dock. And being back home up here, up on the hill, at a reasonable hour. I'm talking 7:30. You know, after running 3 trips. Now this year, they've got us at a 2 fish limit for pinks.
Okay.
And it's not a constraint with the, as we understand it, with the pink population. The pink population this year, the returns are looking really fantastic. But when they're putting these fisheries together, there are areas that, you know, just not only pinks are going through. We may have coho going to like the Stillaguamish or to other rivers or other runs that are going through here. They wanted to limit the impact on the northern areas around Mukilteo North. So they've got us currently at a 2 fish per limit on pinks.
Right.
And now that may change. We've been told that may change once we get some fisheries going, once we get some effort put in. But it's looking like it'd be a fantastic, year to put them in the box. And this year, the ocean run coho, the forecast for that is up as well.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. You know, there was a time that this been, 20 years ago now, but I was at kind of a remote place up in the southeast. And the pink run, the pink were coming into this little river that we were on. We were the only ones on the entire river. And we were right at the mouth of it. And I was just absolutely in awe seeing all of the fish jumping, you know, just constantly. And so I had the camera with me. Now this was, you know, digital camera. So I think I had the shutter speed at 1/100th. And so I took a picture of this kind of cove area before they hit the river. And in this one picture I took, I counted 27 different pink salmon in the air, all in that 1/100th of a second. It was crazy.
It's amazing. Yeah, the year before last, we went up to an area. A lot of you fishermen know about this. Some may not know, but it's an area called the Shipwreck. It's directly across from the southeast corner of Whidbey Island.
Yeah.
And it is south of Muckleutee. It's a little bay there. We call it Brown's Bay. And but the same was going on up there closer to Muckleutee. But these fish were going, you know, with the current heading south. And mm-hmm. then if you looked up there across the way, past the point there, another huge group of them were going up north, probably heading to the Snohomish River up there, past Muckleutee up to Everett. But, you know, you've been out on the water before. You see how the dolphins, you know, they sound and their fins come up, and they're hundreds and hundreds and hundreds in a line, like giant serpent. I don't know, really? probably 2 miles long. It was the craziest thing. And I saw this, and people were taking pictures of it. And you know, I had my binoculars, was looking what direction they were going. I thought, well, maybe we'll just swing in there. And as soon as I turned the boat, we got a double. And we were done. We didn't even need to go close to them. But that's how it can be when these pinks are in. And one of the reasons that they just proliferate so gets better every year, unless we have an ocean condition, is that they don't get a lot of commercial pressure.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you're a purse seiner or a netter, you know, and you've got a season, you know, you're not going to make the bucks on those that you're going to make on an Alaska King or something. So just not a lot of pressure on it. So nature really, really takes over. Everything equals out, you know, water seeks its own level. When you leave these mm-hmm. fish alone, they just boom, boom, boom. They just come back in a huge way.
Right. Right. I'll be darned. Now, when do the kings come into your area?
So normally for us here, Central Puget Sound, right, we actually have kings, winter kings in the winter, which we call them winter blackmouth. Right. We have them in the winter, and there's winter blackmouth, and there's some springers out there right now. So the real question is, when can we go fishing for them? So
there you go.
Typically, our season starts for our summer kings, July the 16th. Now, mm-hmm. There's been a couple seasons where they've pushed us back. Last year being one of them, they pushed us back a week or so to the 26th of the July. So this year we've negotiated that back. So we're going to start up July the 16th.
Right.
Now, luckily where I am right here in my backyard, literally we've got two fishing areas that we can fish in. So right out of here, Edmonds is area 10, which is from Edmonds down through Seattle area. And then just north of us is what we call Area 9. That is, everybody will be familiar with that, Possession Point, Possession Bar, southeast corner, Whidbey Island. And then when you go a little bit north of that, you're going to get the southeast corner of Whidbey, and it'll go across to an area called the Shipwreck up to Muckleutee, which is Everett, and that is Area 8, too. So mm-hmm. we start July the 16th. And each area has a limit. Area 9 has a not a limit, but a quota of how many fish the fishermen can catch. Once those fish are caught, they shut the season down. So Area 9 and 10 will have a king season this year. Area 8-2, which is up to Mukilteo, Everett area, they will not have a king season. And area 8-1, which is a little bit further up there, close to Port Susan, they do not have a king season. They have not had one for a few seasons. But what we'll generally do is area 9 generally burns through its quota relatively quick. Usually area 9, which is the southeast corner, would be, depending on the year, it can last 7 to 12 days, 7 to 10 days, maybe 14 days. Doesn't sound like a lot of time, but everybody and their brother takes vacation time off, and everybody goes for the Kings, and they just eat them up there. You know, yours truly will do that too, because we'll just turn a corner, we'll go up to Area 9, and we'll fish for Kings there. Mm-hmm. And then when it closes, we'll just go right out of the marina and catch the Kings right out in front of Edmonds. So we kind of do that. Most of us will fish Area 9. And then when the quota is burnt up there, we'll just fish out our backyard here in Area 10. And that'll usually last us, you know, depending on the year, usually we'll have king opportunity pretty much through the end of August.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. And then we've got coho coming in there too. So you can get, you know, you're going to get early ocean run coho in there. So it's kind of a mixed bag. I mean, I don't know what we're going to do from one trip to the next. I mean, most of the time we'll fish, we'll put a couple lines up for coho, and then we'll put a line or two down for kings. And, you know, we get a king, bada boom. We get a coho, bada boom. So that's a great time in there.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Gosh, it sounds like you've got a great season ahead of you. That's awesome, man.
I think it's going to be fantastic. I will tell you this. With the whole, you know, global apocalypse, you know, that mm-hmm. we've been kind of stuck in. And I'm not going to complain, because last year was a fantastic year for us. I mean, people were stuck home, and they wanted to get out, and they wanted to go fishing. They wanted to do stuff. They wanted to get the kids out of the house, away from the TV, away from the video games, even the salty dogs, you know, mm-hmm. they were tired of hanging around the house. They wanted to go out. But this year, I'm telling you, people are ready to rip that mask off. Mm-hmm. And everybody is going to bust out this year. I've got calls from, well, all over the world, but all over the country. And this is going to be the year that people are just going to bust out. I mean, they haven't been able to go on vacation for over a year. You know, they're sitting on all that money they've saved, and everybody's just chomping at the bit to get out and have a good time. Mm-hmm. Not just fishing. I mean, people are going to get out. They're going to go to your theme parks. They're going to want to go. They're going to want to go to the farmer's market. They're going to want to go to the beach. They're going to want to go do stuff. And it's about time. I mean.
Oh, yeah. 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 No, you're exactly right. I know a ton of people that are just, you know, biting at the bit to go and do something, you know, and what better activity than going fishing? That's fun, man.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And what a better way to, you know, teach the kids something. I mean, you're making memories for a lifetime when you get your son or daughter out there and, you know, they're seeing bald eagles. You might get out there on a day where you see the killer whales out there. That's something your kids are going to remember for the rest of their life.
That's exactly right.
Don't see that every day. We had, this happened a few times last summer. We were right off of off the area called Point Jefferson, which is just out of Edmonds there, and it's on the other side. They're on the Kitsap side. And we had 2 days in a row with this. There's a huge family of bald eagles that's on the Kitsap side. Uh-huh. And a family that's on the other side there that is close to the shoreline side. Down there, there's a sanctuary that is a wooded area that used to be a hunting reserve for the for a uh, uh, community built in the 1900s. It was called, forget the name of it, but anyway, there's a family of eagles in there. Oh, we're out there fishing. Huge eagles fly right over the bow of the boat and boom, they're swooping up salmon. I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they get these fish in the air. The fish are almost the size of the eagle. You think of the engineering in that. How is it possible that that eagle can pull up that much weight? Well, think of Ted.
Yeah.
And you're a big guy. Are you going to pull up a, you know, even a 6, 7, 8 pound, you know, king, maybe 8, 9 or 10 pound king.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the wingspan on these eagles isn't a lot bigger than the fish that they were yanking out of the water. I don't know how they do it, but it's pretty amazing. Wow. Pretty amazing.
What's
and fun. Then that particular area, we've seen a lot of activity that is increasing every season. And we've seen it a few times over the winter king fishery that we have. The transient killer whales have been coming in, and these are the big killer whales. These are the killer whales that eat salmon and seals, and they're whale hunters as well. And you could definitely tell the difference when you see the transient whales, because their girth is a lot bigger. They're just a more massive animal, and we're seeing those guys all the time. So you don't see that every day. That's a treat.
Now that's not anything to be afraid of, right?
What was that, Ted?
That isn't anything to be afraid of. If you're sitting
absolutely not.
Yeah.
Oh no, it's one of nature's wonders. They're out there. They're doing the same thing that you and I are out there doing. They're looking for looking for food. They're looking for salmon. You know, they're the residents, southern residents. Generally, they'll always have calves with them. I don't recall ever seeing any of the transients with calves. Generally, the transients are travelers, and they're on hunting trips.
Right.
But we do see a lot of the residents with calves.
Uh-huh.
Well, yeah, and kids really like that. No, they're not going to bother you. And actually, it's not like we go and approach them. When we're out fishing, generally we're not, you know, looking for whales. But if we're out fishing and whales approach us, which happens quite often, then we'll see them. We don't, you know, we try not to disturb them at all. But once we're fishing, you know, if they're in front of us, we're going to turn to port or starboard, and we're going to kind of troll away from them. But a lot of times they're curious. They'll come up and they'll follow you. And they'll say, "Ah, what is that?" Very smart creatures.
Oh, that's cool. So let's put on a chef's hat.
We'll
go out on June 16th. And you catch, you know, a cooler full of resident coho. Now, what do? You just you cut them up into little chunks and have, fried fish and chips. Or what would you do with it?
I'm not going to do that with these resident cohos, my friend. No, you will be sitting in the corner with the captain's dunce cap on if you try and do that. These fish are spectacular, and. So kind of led into it a little bit, but I'll tell you what makes these fish so spectacular is that they're eating the shrimp and krill before they transition into herring. And the shrimp and krill are, as we all know, they're little crustaceans, and they have got crustacean-y, shrimpy flavor to them, which imparts itself into the flesh of the salmon. And in addition to that, it's gonna turn the color of the flesh a really dark red. What this all means is the taste it's unbelievable. If we had, you know, our summer kings coming in at that time and they were eating, you know, that buffet of shrimp and krill, the salmon would be priceless. But what I do with them, when I take them home for Chris, a lot of times we're just gonna turn them into sushi. What you want to do with these things is as little as possible. Keep it very simple. Do not overcook them. Like any other salmon, we're going to want to cook it to no more than medium rare. Medium rare, and it's pink in the middle. Oh, my God, that's not cooked. That's raw. Well, no, it's perfect, because when you take it off the grill, it's going to continue to cook. It's going to have ambient heat in it, which is going to continue to cook the flesh. You cook that fish all the way to done, it's going to be overcooked. So I do simple things with them. A little lemon butter, a little lemon dill butter, salt, pepper, oil. A lot of times I'm going to make sushi with them. I'll fillet them out, and I will take that fillet and I will butterfly that fillet or cut that fillet in half. This is a really good one that I really like. I'll take a little mixture of Dungeness crab, mayonnaise, salt, pepper, and lemon, and I will stuff the salmon with that or roll the salmon, make a salmon roll with that crab mixture in there, and just lightly bake that. That is fantastic. Finish that with a little lemon, little butter on top, or you could make a butter sauce if you want to get creative. And I'm going to put a recipe for, we call it a beurre blanc, but it's basically a butter sauce. Beurre blanc is a white wine butter sauce. I'm going to put a recipe up that on the website. And you can make a little butter sauce and put that on top. What I'm saying is these fish have maximum flavor. You don't want to add anything to it. Whatever you add to it is going to detract from the flavor of the fish. So I keep it as simple as possible. Also, a great thing to do with these guys, too. In the summer, you got friends over for lunchtime. Sometimes I'll make a little open-faced salmon sandwich, which is fantastic. You can sear them, pull it off, and then go to, your Pure Foods or Whole Foods Market or something and get a little mix called Frisée or Wild Spring Mix. It's just wild greens. It's not heavy stuff. It's leafy, real light fare. And I like to take a nice piece of brioche bread. Brioche is a buttery, just fantastic, flavorful bread. Grill that with a little butter. Toss your mixed greens with a little light vinaigrette. You can go buy a vinaigrette or you can make one yourself. And then you toss those mixed greens. You got your brioche, your mixed greens, and you put some nice Roma tomatoes, not those store-bought robot tomatoes, those tomatoes that don't have any flavor. Get yourself a nice heirloom organic tomato. You spent all this money to go fishing on gas and lures and beer for your friends and everything else. Treat yourself. Get good products. Get a nice Roma tomato, nice heirloom tomato. Cut that. Your brioche, your tomato, your greens, your nice salmon on top. Oh, my God. That is world class right there. That is fantastic. Awesome.
That sounds
delicious. You're going to impress your girlfriend and wife when you make her something like that.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
That's going to put a lot of points in the bank.
Yep. And you make a really good point, is that you can over-season or over-condiment salmon, and when it really needs to be the showcase in the entire dish, you don't want to do much with it, I don't think, to get the most out of it.
No, absolutely kills me. So salmon is a fish that is loaded with flavor and character already. You could turn salmon into beef jerky if you wanted to, but why would you? I mean, the whole point of eating the salmon is to have the gorgeous flavor and profile of the salmon. So the more you do to it, the more it takes away from it. I've seen guys put barbecue sauce on salmon.
You're kidding me, really?
Ridiculous. I've seen guys put ketchup on salmon. I don't know where they come from. But the less you do with it, the better. And of course, you would never do that with any quality protein. But the biggest mistake that folks are going to make is that they're going to try to kill it. They're going to try to overcook it. It's not done until it's done. Okay. And then they cook that poor thing, or Joe's got it on the barbecue, he's got fire flames licking up at it, and it's charring the thing. And then by the time he takes it off the grill, it's it was already done 5 minutes before he took it off the grill for one. And now he's taking it off the grill, taking it over to the table, and, you know, mom's making potato salad or whatever she's doing, and everybody's getting ready to sit down, and, you know, they're bringing over all the condiments and everything. And by the time they sit down, it's went from done to overdone to salmon jerky. Mm-hmm. You want to take that salmon, and I would recommend everybody, if you're going to cook anything, get yourself a nice digital thermometer.
Okay.
Not an analog thermometer. What's the difference? So a digital thermometer, you can get them anywhere. Get them at Fred Meyer. You can get them at any store, especially a good store like Bargreen Ellingson or, you know, or Sur La Ta, something like that. Digital thermometer, it's digital. It's got a battery in it. And as soon as you get it, what you're going to want to do is you're going to want to take a glass or a coffee cup or whatever with about half full of ice and half full of water. And you're going to let it sit there till it reaches equilibrium. You're going to want to put that thermometer in there. What's the temperature of ice and water? 32 degrees.
Right.
When that digital thermometer, if it's not 32 degrees, you're going to adjust it till it's 32 degrees. Now that thing is calibrated perfectly. You should always have a digital thermometer when you're, you know, when you're just doing your normal grilling outside in the summer. You're going to want to know what the temperature is of the potato salad or your steak or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to want to pull that salmon off. You know, you take your spatula, depending on how you're cooking it, and just crack it from underneath. And you see that it's pink and gelatinous a little bit, just pink in the middle. Pull it off because it's going to retain that ambient heat. And what does heat do? It's going to expand until it reaches equilibrium with the outside temperature. And that's the worst thing you could do, not just with salmon. I mean, with any protein, but especially seafood, salmon, halibut, lingcod, rockfish, cabazon, all your seafood. It's very light anyway, and it's going to retain and that heat is just going to expand through it, and that heat's going to cook it. It's going to overcook it.
The worst thing that I've ever tried to cook, you know, over the years has been scallops. You know, there's no time, you know, leave it in the pan for very long. But like you were saying, it's the ambient heat that it's while it's resting, it cooks the rest of it. But seafood itself is all that same way.
Oh yeah. Oh my God. Scallops. One of my favorite type of delicacies in the world is those sea scallops. Do the same thing with scallops. You know, if you're searing them, I would never recommend to cook a scallop on a, you know, like a broiler, like a barbecue grill. I would never do that. I like to sear them. For one thing, you're gonna get that nice color. Searing is going to keep all the moisture in.
Right.
Flame is going to take the moisture out and dry it. Searing is going to cook it, heat it, and keep the moisture in. I remember years ago when I was just coming up, we used to get these, you know, it was at, actually it was at the Metropolitan Grill down in Seattle. And we had a guy that used to bring in these Alaska deep sea scallops, and they used to be wrapped in cheesecloth. I don't even know if you can get these anymore, Ted, but these things were gigantic. And we used to sear them, and it would be an entree all to itself. But these guys, I'm just looking at my hand here, Ted, and I'm just kind of just getting a rough estimate of the size of these things. And these things must have been 5 inches around maybe 3 inches deep.
An abalone.
And that was a sea scallop. I don't know where they got them. They got them, you know, they were deep sea Alaska sea scallops. And I remember me and my buddy Ken, Ken was the executive chef at that time, and then he moved up to be the regional chef. But we decided we were gonna dig into one of these one day. Oh my God! Oh, it was that was heaven on earth.
Really?
Those were, and then guys said, "Why don't you bacon wrap those?" what? You just take a beautiful scallop that, you know, and bacon wrapped scallops are great, you know, but I wouldn't do it to one of those. You know, I can do it to a little scallop or something like that. But yeah, we could talk food all day, but yeah, that was fantastic. I guess the lesson learned here is, boys and girls, don't overdo it. Don't overcook. Don't overseason. Do not overpower.
Right. Right.
If you learn anything else from me today, do not overpower your seafood. You know, you spend so much money, you fishing knuckleheads, for the gas, for the moorage, for the trailer, you know, for the haul in and haul out fee. And then, you know, you hook into something fantastic, and then you take it home and you invite your neighbors over, and then you destroy it. Don't do that.
right, exactly. Well, Chris, man, hey, we sure appreciate the chance to talk with you again. It's always a pleasure. I'm always learning stuff when we're talking back and forth, and it sounds like you've got one heck of a season ahead of you. I would imagine your calendar is going to start filling quickly. How do people get a hold of you if they want to talk about booking a trip for the 2021 season?
Well, the best way to get some information and get all my contact information is to go to bigkingsalmoncharters.com. Mm-hmm. Now, all my information's there. You can email me at chris@bigkingsalmoncharters.com. My phone is on 24/7, and that's 425-776-7688. Now, I have other boats that work with me. So, you know, a lot of times we're going to get big groups. We do all the big companies, Microsoft, you know, we do Google, Facebook, Amazon. Mm-hmm. So, we do a lot of big groups where, you know, we'll take out six per boat, and then we'll have like a nice private fishing derby. We do that all the time, but I really like taking out families. This year there's going to be some pressure this year. Like I say, everybody's ready to get out, and we have had very few breaks in the phone call situation, so it's ringing pretty good now. But if you guys want to get out this summer, or this fall, or actually for the winter blackmouth, this winter blackmouth season is going to be fantastic too. Get a hold of me. We'll have a great time. You know, we have world-class equipment. Everything's top-notch on the boat. So, and we're all, you know, COVID compliant, and hopefully that's going to be done with by the time we get through June anyway. But we're ready on that. So, and you know, all my captains have all been had their second vaccine. So we're all safe here.
Awesome. Well, you know, and I think really one of the big draws to fishing with you is also your background in the culinary world, and you know, cooking this delicious seafood. I mean, what a great opportunity for somebody to not only to hook into a great big fish, but know exactly what they're going to do with it when they bring it home, you know? And I just commend you for that, because that's a great deal for people.
You know, and on top of that, I've got a lot of guys, you know, that just got their boat, and a lot of folks just go out. They just want to learn how to, get a line in the water. They never heard of a downrigger before. I moved here from Tennessee and we love to fish there. What's this all about? Well, here we're going to show you. So I do that all the time. We do some boating classes, some fishing classes. We're all about having fun. That's the most important thing. I want to tell you guys, you know, you can go to, you know, the farmer's market. You can go to any, you know, seafood counter and get your fish. Mm-hmm. We go fishing for the experience, for the adventure, for the fun, you know, for the thrill of it, for the passion, and to make memories with our family. And that's what we're all about.
So
it's
true.
It's fishing and having fun doing it.
So true. Well, Chris, man, thank you so much. I wish you the best of season. Keep well, and hope you and your family are, you know, doing well, and just keep that up. We really appreciate what you do, man.
Oh, I really appreciate talking to you again, Ted. We always have a great time when we do it. And here he comes, the celebrity bulldog. He's come back into the office. I think he wants his He wants his teriyaki flank steak. He's looking at me kind of sideways. I know that look. So when he looks at me, the sideways look, it's like, are we going to have dinner today or what? Right. So I got to go and feed him, you guys. Okay. All right, you fishermen out there, you be good and do the right thing.
Thanks, Chris.